Hey there, party people. Before we dive into today's podcast episode, I wanted to take a quick second to let you know about my new and improved free workshop coming to you soon and very soon. That's right. The Ultimate Music Lesson Planning Roadmap is right around the corner. And this time you have four chances to catch the party live. In this workshop, I'll be sharing my proven system for how I plan my lessons week to week and beyond efficiently, effectively, and beating that lesson planning overwhelm once and for all. It all comes down to four planning pillars that are truly the secret sauce. If you're ready for all the tricks and tips, because you know I'll spill the tea, head to annmaleski.com/workshop to snag your seat for this free limited time workshop. Again, that's annmaleski.com/workshop, or just click the link in the show notes. I can't wait to see you there. If you've had the great opportunity to watch a master teacher in the general music classroom, I'm willing to bet that you sat there with your jaw dropped in awe. And I bet the reason why is because the kids were sort of zapped into this magical universe where they were just moving from space to space, place to place, activity to activity, song to song, and it was just this magical lesson that seemed to unfold like a beautiful flower. Now, that sounds super duper cheesy, but odds are, as an observer, you were feeling the exact same way. Like you were transported to a completely different place and that everything just sort of happened and you were part of this really great authentic musical experience. And I'm willing to bet that if you went back and really analyzed everything that happened in that wonderful, beautiful, masterful lesson that you got to observe, fingers crossed that this has happened to you, you would notice that a big component of why all that happened exactly the way that it did is because of transitions. So today on the Anna Krusik podcast, episode number 128, we are going to talk all about transitions. I'm Anne Maleski, and I've helped music teachers just like you get more intentional in their classrooms through my trainings, curriculum, and tips shared on this podcast. The truth is, teaching music is hard. You have a bunch of kids to teach and not a lot of free time to figure out how. Feeling overwhelmed and frustrated is totally normal. But here's the good news. It only takes a few simple steps to flip the script. And although it may be simple, it's definitely not easy unless you have the right toolkit. So let's start tuning and transforming your music teacher life right now. The actionable steps you need to find the purpose, follow a sequence, and choose joy are right here. This is the Anna Krusik Podcast. So today's episode is going to have sort of two parts to it. And the first is going to be talking about what a transition even is. You might be hearing me talking about transitions and being like, that sounds great. It sounds like it's a magical thing. What on earth is it? So I got you covered there. The other part of today's episode is going to be all about what a successful transition might look like in your music classroom. Again, this is not you have to have all five of these scenes covered in order for it to be called a quote unquote transition or be a successful transition even, but it's something to consider in terms of ways that you can incorporate transitions meaningfully and intentionally and purposefully into your classroom structure, into your lesson structure, if you will. And then the final piece of the puzzle will be the next podcast episode, all about how to start putting some transitions into your lessons and some examples of what that looks like a little bit more explicitly. So today we're going to get into some of the nuts and bolts, and then next podcast episode, we're going to talk really candidly about some ideas for transitions specifically to use in your classroom from certain activities to other certain activities, and I'll walk you through them and all of that good stuff. But let's go ahead and kick some things off by talking about, well, let's just start talking about a lesson plan or a lesson flow, as I like to call it. So if you think about your lesson structure or framework or 8 million other terms you could use to describe what a lesson looks like in your elementary music classroom or your general music classroom or your music classroom, we're thinking about having this loose structure in our brains every time we sit down to plan. So last week we talked all about opening and closing routines and how our goal was to get our students primed and ready to learn making music, but also getting ready to focus in on whatever our behavioral objective, our learning target, our learning outcome might be for that day. So we have our lesson structure, and within that lesson structure, we have that opening routine, we have that closing routine, and then we also have all the other stuff in between, right, if you will. So we have all these different songs and games and activities that we're going to be doing with our students, all of these different musical experiences we're facilitating and setting up and wanting to explore with them in order to reach that learning target. So the lesson flow, the purpose of the lesson flow is to have an idea of some sort of flow from the opening routine to the closing routine that we're going to take our students through to have this really authentic experience that reflects our learning target. So let's talk about the purpose of the learning target or targets. Now, as you probably picked up upon in last week's podcast episodes, when we talk about the target that we're bringing up or drawing attention to inside of an opening or closing routine, we're talking about something the students can read in their own language, such as "Today in music, I will," and then also have an opportunity to get an idea of whether or not they got it, right? An opportunity to self-assess not only throughout the lesson, but at the end in our closing routine. But odds are, in the way that we set up our classroom and the way that we plan, we do this layering approach where oftentimes there are more than one learning objectives, more than one lesson objectives inside of our lesson flow. And so when you think about having a major behavioral objective and a minor behavioral objective, which is what I tend to draw toward when I'm planning a lesson, thinking behavioral objective in terms of things you can actually observe students doing and observable behavior, then those two things are going to be the anchors for my lesson flow. So we have a major behavioral objective and a minor behavioral objective. One of those will be a postable learning target, meaning that students probably have some sort of later learning sequence framework knowledge on it, meaning they probably have some literacy experience with a rhythm or a melody or a form or something so that they can really consciously and explicitly assess themselves and their peers later on and see how they're doing with that particular concept. But there's likely something else going on that we're getting ready to do more with. That's going to be a minor behavioral objective or maybe even the major behavioral objective. But regardless, there's lots of stuff going on in our lessons, right? And so we have those behavioral objectives that we're thinking about as we're planning that are really grounding what our lesson flow is doing. So we have the lesson flow, we have our learning target, and then we have transitions. So now that I'm talking about it, I almost feel like I need to reverse the order in which I brought up the learning targets or the behavioral objectives and a lesson flow. Because if we think about it, what we are going to choose to put inside of our music lessons, inside of that lesson flow, is always going to relate back to one or both of those behavioral objectives that we have for that particular lesson. So the purpose of those behavioral objectives is to ground our lesson, to anchor it. The purpose of the lesson flow is to flesh out activities that will accomplish those behavioral objectives. And then the purpose of transitions is to move seamlessly from one activity to the next, from different areas in your lesson flow in a way that really connects everything and brings all of the pieces together, hopefully in a way that is reflective in some way, shape, or form of what you're going to be doing with one or both learning targets. So let's just say that one more time. Hopefully a little bit more brief, although we all know that brevity is not Anne's strong suit. So the purpose of your learning targets or your behavioral objectives, same meaning, different phrases, right? So the purpose of those learning outcomes, there's another one for you there too, is to anchor whatever you're going to put in your lesson flow. The purpose of the lesson flow is to flesh out what those targets are. And then the purpose of the transitions is to connect everything together in a meaningful way. Let's just sum up all of the stuff I said about transitions with the word meaningful or the word intentional or the word purposeful. Now, the reason why we need to make sure that our transitions are purposeful, and that can be a lot of different shades of what purposeful means, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But the reason why we want to be really intentional about these transitions is because, as we've talked about before, everything that happens in our music classroom is taking up precious time. And we want to be really careful about not just checking a box. We want to be really careful about not just filling time, but absolutely everything that happens in our music lesson, including how we go from activity to activity, is an opportunity for us to really, really amp up the musical experience and whatever it is that I don't want to say we want to accomplish, but we want our students to experience within the 30 minutes, 45 minutes, or whatever it might be that we have them each week. And so by making sure that those transitions are intentional, instead of playing this game of red light, green light, which we'll talk about more in just a second, we not only create this beautiful connected thread throughout each segment in our lesson, but we also take those opportunities to have another like mini experience with whatever it is that's happening inside of our music classroom. So if you've never thought about transitions, if you've always just sort of had your list of activities that you're going to make sure you can check off in your music room, that's great. Today's episode is hopefully going to give you a starting place to think about what transitions could do for your teaching and how it can really amplify or really fill out or really help to create this lush kind of magical experience that I was alluding to in today's podcast episode introduction. So the only caveat I want to give before we go further into detail with the five things that I think really help to make a successful transition is, when we talk about the purpose of a learning target being the anchor, and we talk about the purpose of the lesson flow fleshing out those targets, and we talk about the transitions being the connecting thread, that doesn't mean that a transition in order to be successful always has to be like an extractable pattern of your thing. So if your lesson is, your lesson target for this particular lesson is students will read and sing Do. And you have a lesson flow with all of these beautiful pieces of repertoire that include Do and activities that highlight it and write it and all that good stuff, great. But it doesn't mean that you have to make sure that every transition from activity to activity is highlighting, like, my students can sing Do. That's one of the nice things about having a transition, because that's sort of that extra practice opportunity in addition to all this other stuff. But that's not the only way to have a successful transition. So let's go ahead and get into it and talk about what really does make a successful transition, and then we'll get into some specific examples next podcast episode. So the first thing that's great about a successful transition is it just keeps the lesson flowing. So if you imagine what it looks like when you have your list of four or five activities inside of your classroom, and you are going down the list, check, 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 check. You do this activity. Okay, we're done. Now we're going to do this. Then you do this activity. Okay, great. We're done. Now we're going to do this. Having transitions in between your activities is a way to do your lesson flow, to complete your lesson flow and actually keep it flowing. So you don't have to do this whole stop, okay, now we're going to do this, and actually tell your kids what's coming up next. Instead, you're leading them from one musical experience to the next musical experience with a musical experience. And it's all about finding some sort of common thread between the two activities, or between any two given activities, to move from one to the next. And so that's why, if we think about how the transitions relate to the lesson flow and also the lesson targets, you can see how if everything in your lesson is relating back to one or two different lesson objectives, it's going to be much, much easier to find that common thread, to find that connecting piece, to find that meaningful transition that also alludes to that learning target. But overall, the first thing that is super awesome about transitions is it just keeps everything moving. It allows for that magic that we were talking about in the beginning, and it keeps our students from having to play this game of red light, green light, stop, and then telling them what is coming next. Instead, we just get to show them. The second thing that can make a really successful transition is, depending on how you set it up and how your procedures are set up in your music classroom anyway, it really helps with those procedures. So say you're moving from one section of the room to another section of the room. Maybe you're moving from sitting and playing a circle game to needing to go to instruments or go to pick up materials or something like that. Depending on how you create your transitions, which in this specific successful transition tip is all about how you set up your procedures at the beginning of the year and your classroom culture and all of that good stuff, But if you have a really refined transition and a really concise way from moving place to place and also gathering materials, that is a really amazing way to use your transitions. And a lot of times, that's just thinking about, like I said, ways to be as concise as possible and also to give a time limit. Make it time bound. So make it time bound, make it musical, even if it's simply just singing instructions, counting down, and then you're to the next place. If that's something that happens in your classroom a lot, it helps expedite those procedures. It helps you move from one place to the next. And there's some other ways too that you can create some active musicking opportunities for those other students or for all students, even if they're moving through space. Even if they're getting materials, there's things that you can do, ways you can echo patterns or this, that, and the other thing that we'll talk about next podcast episode that still has their brain getting this big aural image of what's happening in your music classroom without saying, okay, everybody stop. Now we're going to go and pick up our mallets, and then we're going to go to our instruments, and only one person to one instrument, and then you need to sit there with your hands crossed in front of you and wait for my next instructions. Because when we do things like that, no matter how quickly and how responsive our students are to those instructions, we're still losing some precious time. And even if it's something as simple as you grab your mallets, listen to me, and you start to echo some patterns, and then my turn first and use your voice, or just those little things that can help to not only keep the music going, but can even be used to clue them in on what's coming next.
Remember your first term of teaching? Learning all the skills that you don't get taught in music school? Managing a transitioning culture in your classroom? Finding out that you have to teach guitar this term? During those early years, we found out that leaning on a community of music educators was important, not only for building that knowledge in ourselves, but also maintaining enough sanity to serve the students right in front of us. Amused is a podcast centered around a community of music teachers. Between the four of us, we teach choir, band, orchestra, general, jazz, and marching band at the elementary through collegiate levels. We certainly don't have all the answers, but you're welcome to listen in while we try to find them. Join us while we work through the challenges of music teaching and celebrate the joy of bringing music making into the lives of young people. In each episode, you'll hear stories, both good and bad, about that week of teaching, and we'll try and tackle an issue that one of us is struggling with. Something we're all taught is that music brings people together, but being the only teacher in your subject at a site can be really isolating. We think everyone ought to be a part of a community, and you're welcome to come join ours. Episodes come out on Wednesdays during the school year, and you can find us wherever you get your podcasts and at amusedcast.org.
So the first thing that makes a successful transition is that it keeps the lesson flowing. The second thing that helps with a successful transition is helping with procedures. The third sort of attribute, I guess, or characteristic of a successful transition is that there might actually be an assessment opportunity. So take, for example, if you are in a circle formation and you are playing a game and it is based around the rhythm that is actually your learning target, and the students know what it looks like, they know what it sounds like, and they know how to clap it and create with it and all of that good stuff. There's nothing stopping you from moving from this circle game to another circle game or another song or another activity that also highlights the same pattern and taking the opportunity to echo patterns back and forth, even to individual students. And you can sort of manipulate what one song's rhythm is into the next song's, like transform it into the next song's rhythm in a way that is really, really seamless and just changes like a beat at a time. But instead of just doing my turn, your turn to the entire class, that's something that you could do to individual students, and you could do it non-verbally. So if you're watching me right now, something like ta, ta, ti-ti-ta to one student with direct eye contact, and then looking at the next student as you're clapping, ti-ti-ti-ti-ta-ta, and then it's their turn as well. And that gives you an assessment opportunity. An assessment not in the sense that you're going to have your grade book here and then you're going to clap and then it's going to be their turn, but an opportunity to just grab some observational data, to take some anecdotal information into your brain and think, oh yeah, they're really getting this, or oh wow, a lot of people people are having trouble keeping the beat or getting this rhythm or aren't able to respond in the way that I'm wanting them to. And so really quickly using that transition from this activity to that activity, and probably not getting to every student, but getting to a handful, can give you just a quick sort of read of the room. And so that assessment opportunity in between songs can really be a useful tool, right? So if you have to move from this particular piece of repertoire to another anyway, instead of stopping and then starting the next song, why not find a way to thread the two together? And then once you have an idea of how to thread the two together, you can, again, take those observational assessments. And it wouldn't necessarily have to be one student. You could do a whole class and then just take a read of the room looking around. But, you know, the more that you do those types of things with nonverbal communication, looking at your students, they're used to kind of being called on without being called on, just being called on with eye contact, looking, and then they know it's their turn to respond or create or make music. The more you do that, the more they're used to you doing that, right? And so it just becomes one of those procedural things that's just tied into your classroom culture and what happens maybe even every single lesson. So a successful transition helps keep that lesson flow, helps with procedures, can even be an assessment opportunity, an observational assessment opportunity, and it makes that lesson magic. And what I just mentioned where, you know, we have this song that's related to that song, and we can transform this rhythm into that rhythm to connect the two, if we go my turn, your turn to the whole class, that's a great way to keep students engaged. Going my turn, your turn to individual students, popcorn style with nonverbal communication, is a huge way to keep engagement up. Because what happens when we find ways to use musical behaviors or have a time-bound transition or just have something that is that magic connector thread, there is way less opportunity for off-task behavior. Because the other thing about not having transitions in your classroom and having this activity and then saying, okay, and we're all done with that, here's what we're going to do next. The minute the music making stops, at least in my experience in my classrooms before I found a way to really meaningfully incorporate transitions, the minute that the music making stops is the minute that you get some of those star catchers. You get some of those kids who are just a little bit off task, and that kind of compounds on itself and it's hard to get them back. But when we have ways that we can continue to keep them engaged with the music making, even in the cracks of our lesson, they don't have that opportunity anymore because they don't have any choice but to keep on going with what's happening in the music making. So last but not least, thinking again with just that very non-specific example, very general example about, you know, having this and that song related with this particular rhythm and transforming it. When we do things like that, you have your students' brains activated in the music making, and they're already starting to predict and anticipate what's about to happen next without you having to tell them. One of the most beautiful things about transitions, besides the start and stop kind of stuff, is that your verbal communication, your verbal instructions can go way, way down. Because if you're constantly focused on making music happen, and increasing the opportunity for music making, even within the transitions, even within the instructions, that means that your students are consistently engaged and you don't have to tell them. You don't have to tell them, okay, now we're going to do this and then we're going to make a circle and then it's going to be your turn and then it's going to be his turn and then her turn and then we'll all do it. We don't do any of that. We just find a way to thread the two activities together while making that happen. So maybe we're singing, we're echoing or leading an echo imitation exercise with rhythms or solfa or whatever it is. And while we're doing that, we're motioning for everybody to make a circle, but the music making is still happening. And while we're still echoing patterns, we're motioning to certain students to face partners inside of the circles, or we're motioning for everyone to line up and get mallets, or you're just handing them mallets as you're echoing things, and then you're pointing to which instruments they should go. There's all of these different ways to keep the music happening. There's so many times that I have observed teachers, myself included, video recordings of myself, where the lessons that feel like they crash and burn, the lessons that hit the fan. And we've talked a lot about this just even in this season of the podcast. But those lessons that seem to really, I have trouble like picking myself back up from, the ones that I've recorded and the ones that I haven't recorded, I know what the issue is that I've talked too much, that I've had to stop the music making too much, that there's too much white space. Right? Where the students have had too much opportunity to start catching those stars and get off task and daydreaming and this, that, and the other thing. And so finding those ways to create transitions, not just to eliminate off-task behavior, but that's part of it, but not even a big part, but just to increase the music making is huge. Because if you add up all of those little white cracks, if you add up white space and cracks, that was a combination of that, white cracks, that's a new thing, I guess. But if you add up all of that white space and those cracks in your lessons, and you start to accumulate that over the course of the year, thinking about how limited our time is and how precious it is and how we want to just squeeze every ounce of music making magic out of it as we possibly can, you know, that really adds up if we're not taking full advantage. So not only is it like really amping up or turning up the volume on the opportunities for music making, but it's also cutting down on transition time. When you start to think about transitions as something that keeps the lesson flowing, that helps with your procedures, that maybe is an assessment opportunity, that eliminates that opportunity for off-task behavior, allows the students to predict and anticipate what's happening. When you think about all of those attributes and you start to think, okay, so what's like the minimum amount of stuff that I need to get from here to there, you're reducing that white space. You're eliminating those cracks in a way that makes that music making magic just sort of happen in your classroom. Now, I will say this. Transitions are one of those things that, well, let me back up. So for me, I feel like I can look at a lesson objective and I can think of activities and I feel super creative and inspired a lot of the time, like 80% of the time, I would say, to come up with something really exciting that I can do with my students. But the thing that takes me the longest, at least at first when it came to lesson planning, is thinking about transitions. Because to come up with a transition or to formulate or whatever word you want to use, a transition that is meaningful, that is economic with time and the types of things that you're asking students to do. So we want it to be musical, we want it to be economic, and we want it to be economical maybe, and we want it to be really, really engaging. And that engaging piece is that prediction and anticipation thing that I talked about here just right at the end. So we want it to be musical, economical, and engaging. So to think of transitions that hit all three of those points is hard at first. But like anything else, the more you do it, the easier it gets. And like anything else, the more you use it in your classroom, the more you wonder how you ever lived without it. I will say that when I first started incorporating transitions into my music lessons, I felt like my classroom management just like, I didn't have to think about it so much because so much was happening. My students were that much more engaged in my music classroom that, like I said, there wasn't that opportunity for that off-task behavior. My kids weren't catching stars so often because they didn't have a chance to. There wasn't any wait time for them in places that they didn't need wait time. Let's go ahead. Because wait time is important in appropriate circumstances, but not in between activities necessarily. So I really, really encourage you to start to think about those places where maybe your lesson is dropping off. To think about those places where maybe you could just add in a simple walk and make a circle in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and you're done. My turn first, and then just go off to the races. Something just as simple as that is something that is time bound. You're making music, so it's going to get their attention. You're giving them a direction, and and they can kind of predict, okay, we're going to be in a circle and then something's going to happen that I have to echo. And so it's hitting a lot of those themes, even though they're not necessarily actively making music, they're having to respond to it in a way that is time bound, engaging, and anticipatory. I'm just not quite sure with my vocabulary today. So hopefully today's podcast's episode is getting your brain starting to spin a little bit about what transitions are, what types of things you can be thinking about as you're starting to want to connect those activities in your lesson really intentionally. Just as a quick recap, remember, we start with our learning targets anytime we go to plan a lesson. Then we flesh those out with our lesson flow, with that opening routine, that closing routine, and everything in between. Then the transitions are the piece that connects everything together. We want a transition that keeps the lesson flowing. We want a transition that helps with procedures. We might have a transition that's an assessment opportunity, even if it's just observational assessment. And that's probably going to happen at least once. One of those transitions in your lesson is probably going to be an informal observation or observational assessment, rather, taking a peek at what kids are doing, how they're responding to whatever element it is that you're focusing on that day. A successful transition is making that music lesson magic, eliminating that off-task behavior, and successful transitions are allowing your students to use their prediction skills to anticipate things, and we want it to be engaging, we want it to be economical, and we want it to be musical. So I hope that helped. Stay tuned for next podcast episode where I'm going to give you some examples. So if you're like, hey, this is great, I still don't really know what you're talking about, hopefully just the things that I spoke about today will get those wheels turning just as you're going through your lessons in the next couple days. But come on back, because I will give you some very explicit, very specific examples that hopefully you can use in your music classroom right now. The Anacrusic Podcast is a proud member of the Music Teacher Development Podcast Network. The Muted Network provides support in the form of audio on-demand programming designed by and for music educators. You can find more information about our network at mutedpodcast.com. Thanks for spending this little pocket of your day with me. I know music teachers are super strapped for time, so be sure to check out all the resources on anacrusic.com for today's episode. Don't forget to click subscribe wherever you're listening to today's podcast so you don't miss an episode of TAP. That way, you'll be notified each and every week when a new episode's live. And if you want even more tips and tricks delivered to your inbox, like a little love note from me to you, make sure you sign up for the Anacrusic newsletter and you'll be the first to know all the things. Also, if you are feeling today's episode, take a screenshot and tag me on Instagram and Facebook. And I'd love you forever if you take a hot minute and leave a review. See you next time.